Good afternoon, everyone. I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me to this nice conference to present our works on how vestigial pneumaticity arises from partially melted charge and spin density waves in the cuprates. So I will explain the word vestigial in a moment. This is the collaboration list. So the work on vestigial pneumaticity arising from charge density wave in the cuprates was done in collaboration with Jill and Steve. And pneumaticity from charge and spin density waves was done in collaboration with Steve, Akash, and Eduardo. Okay, just a quick overlook of what we're going to focus on in this talk. So this is a sketch of the cuprate phase diagrams. And we will be particularly interested in those three phases or orders. I would like to make two things clear here. Number one is we will be only focusing on the pneumatic aspect of the pseudogap. Number two is that there could be other origins of pneumaticity, but within the framework of our theory, we think that pneumaticity arises from spin and charge density waves. Okay. So a unidirectional, the cartoon picture for a unidirectional charge density wave looks like this, where white and black means low and high charge density. And it breaks both translational and rotational symmetries. Similarly, for a unidirectional spin density wave. Now consider turning on temperature or disorder. And the density waves will start to melt. Eventually, the proliferation of defects will restore the translational symmetry, but there is still broken rotational symmetry. And this is what we call pneumatic phase. If we further increase temperature or disorder, nothing will be left. All the orders will be washed out. So we will have a homogeneous and isotropic phase. So then, what does the word vestigial mean? So it means something of a trace of the past. So in this context, it means the pneumatic phase has partial memory of the density wave phase in the sense that it remembers the directions, but not the translational symmetry breaking. Okay, good. So this is the outline of my talk. We will start from a very simple effective field theory consisting of CW order parameters coupling to disorder. And we will see that even infinitesimal amount of disorder will be enough to fully suppress long-range CEW. But generally, pneumatic order can survive up to a critical disorder strength. And for the second part of my talk, we will add spin density wave to the game and explore the possibilities of two-type pneumaticities driven by two different density waves. We have also done works on the interplay between density wave and superconductivity order parameters. But due to time constraint, I will not talk about it. I'm happy to discuss it offline if you want. Okay, so for the first part of the talk, we will be focusing on this region of the cuprate phase diagram. So I know everyone in the audience is pretty familiar with the experimental status of the cuprates, but just want to briefly mention the experimental motivation of why we study this problem. So there has been evidence suggesting a short-range charge density wave in the cuprates. For example, this is the X-ray data. The finite width of the peak located at an incommensurate wave vector tells us the correlation length of this CDW is about 4 or 5 of the wavelength, so it's a short ranged. I want to point it out that here we are not considering the recent high field X-ray experiments. We are here only considering the zero field X-ray experiments. Good. And on the other hand, there has been evidence, as we have seen in this conference, that there's a pneumatic, long-range pneumaticity in the cuprates. So here I'm just showing you another piece of evidence from STM. So people have performed, say, Fourier transform on the real space image of STM and found there's a difference of the Bragg peaks of the intensity of the black peaks along x and y directions, as shown in this inset. So this difference of black peak intensity along x and y directions is a nematicity, and it is long range in the sense that it is larger than the field of view in the SDM experiments. So the take-home message for experiments is short-range charge density wave and long-range nematicity. Okay, now let's go to the theory and see how we can describe this problem. So consider a tetragonal layered system. The charge density can be decomposed into a uniform background charge, rho naught, and the spatially varying part, which can be further decomposed into a slow varying part, phi x, phi y, and a fast oscillating part with wave vectors qx and qy. According to experiments, qx and qy are perpendicular to each other. They have the same magnitude and are incommensurate with respect to the underlying lattice. So our order parameters, our CDW order parameters are phi x and phi y. And each of them is SO2 because it's complex scalar field. And we can further construct a pneumatic order parameter using the CDW order parameters. This pneumatic order parameter characterizes the difference between x and y direction. Okay, now we also include a quenched random field disorder, which couples to the CDW in a linear fashion. Effectively, there will be a disorder field coupling to the pneumatic order in a linear fashion as well. So at this stage, without writing down any theory, we can sort of see that why disorder is very detrimental to the CDW, but not much so to the pneumatic order. So the reason is the following. So CDW, because it's a complex scalar field, it has a face. And this face is directly coupling to the disorder. So the disorder disrupts the face coherence of CDW very easily. But pneumatic, being a real scalar field, only couples to the disorder in a magnitude way. So pneumatic order is less sensitive to disorder. So that's a hand-waving argument. To quantify this idea, let's write down a classical effective field theory consisting of the two order CDW order parameters and respecting this symmetry. So it looks like this. It's just a standard effect, Landau-Ginzburg free energy expansion. Let me walk you through each term. So the first line are the quadratic terms. We have a mass term, a gradient term within xy plane, and a gradient term along z direction between the layers. And then there's the quartic U term. So first of all, U has to be larger than zero to make sure the free energy is bounded below. And we further take U to be positive infinite for simplicity. And in this case, this term becomes a constraint, and this model becomes a nonlinear sigma model. And the sign of delta determines whether stripe or checkerboard is favored. So for example, if delta is positive, then phi x better to be not equal to phi y to minimize the free energy. And motivated by experiments, we took delta to be positive. And lastly, there is this linear coupling between my random field H and the CDW fields. So we assume H on different sides do not talk to each other. And on the same side, the strength of H obey Gaussian distribution, where sigma square here is the disorder strength. So that's the setup. That's our model. To solve it, we first use replica trick, a standard technique to treat disorder. And then for the quartic term, we use Hubbard's tautomage transformation to decouple those quartic terms and look for the saddle point solution. So the saddle point solution is exact when n equals to infinity, where n is the number of components of the CDW fields. So the physical case is n equals to 2. but we push n to be infinity to justify the set point solution. Okay, so this is our model and how we solve it. Now let me present the result. This is a phase diagram as a function of temperature and disorder strength. And we plot it based on those three order parameters, two CDWs and one pneumatic. So the left-right angle means thermal average. The overline here means disorder configuration average. So let's first look at the zero disorder limit, this axis. There are three phases. At low temperature, there's a stripe, or say unidirectional charge density wave phase. And if we increase temperature, there will be a vestigial pneumatic phase. So the thermal fluctuation will restore the translational symmetry, but the rotational symmetry is still being broken. Okay, if we further increase temperature, there will be nothing left, and we will have a homogeneous and isotropic phase here. Now let's turn on disorder. The stripe phase is immediately killed, leaving behind a vestigial pneumatic phase. And at a critical disorder strength, the pneumatic phase also disappeared. So this is a disorder-tuned zero-temperature phase transition. I should also mention that on the operational level, this vestigial means that we do not need to explicitly introduce a pneumatic order parameter in our theory. This pneumaticity automatically arises from a model that consists of only charge density waves. So that's another meaning of vestigial. Okay, so this is a brief summary of part one, where we study a simple model of charge density wave coupling to random field disorder. And we found that disorder can kill long-range charge density wave, but not so easily pneumaticity. Okay, now let's add spin density wave. So we will expand our interest to this region of the phase diagram. I should mention that although the experimentally relatively long-range spin density wave onsets at low temperature, there are anisotropic spin density wave fluctuations onsetting at 150K from neutral scattering. So it is reasonable to assume that the pneumaticity at this region of the phase diagram originates from spin density waves. Okay, so again, a quick motivation from experiments. So this is the neutron scattering data from Bernard Keimer's group. You can clearly see that this intensity is elongated along x direction, but not the y direction. So to be more specific, they fit this intensity using two Gaussian peaks along plus epsilon and minus epsilon, located at plus and minus epsilon, away from the pi-pi antiferromagnetic wave vectors. So this incommensurate peaks only occurs at x direction, but not along y direction. So that's a SCW-induced pneumaticity. Okay, so now let's turn to theory. Very similar to part one, here we're just adding two more order parameters to our classical effective field theory. So we're adding this to spin density wave. And each of them is SO2 cross SO3, where the SO2 comes from the spatial translational breaking, and SO3 comes from the spin space. And later, we will generalize it to SON to justify our analytic approach. We can construct, using the two density waves, two types of pneumatic order parameters. But as we will later see, that they are actually proportional to each other. They are one type pneumaticity. OK, and again, we will write down a Landau-Ginzburg theory consisting of all the density waves and respecting all the symmetries. OK, so it looks like this. Please don't panic. You don't need to look at carefully like each term. So what I would like to point out is just that there are three terms in this free energy expansion: a charge density wave term, a spin density wave term, which look very similar to part one of the talk, and then an interaction term between the charge and spin density waves. So in the charge density wave term, there is a disorder that couples to the charge density wave linearly, just like before. Okay, and now I want to direct your attention to this term, lambda. It is one of the interaction terms between the two density waves, and it is there if the wave vector of the charge density wave is twice the wave vector, or approximately twice the wave vector of the spin density wave, as in the case of 2-1-4 family. If, on the other hand, Q is not equal to 2K, if Q is far away from 2K, then this term, as in the case of YBCO, then this term can be neglected because it's fast oscillating in space and can be averaged out. And we are interested in YBCO, so this term is gone. That's good. Now let's solve the theory. So very similar technique. First apply replica trick, and then perform the so-called variational free energy search. So this is technically slightly different from the settle point solution we mentioned earlier. As to how different, and I don't have time to talk about it here. So if you're interested, you can look up in the paper or discuss with me offline. Okay, so that's the model and how we solve it. Let's look at the results. So this is a phase diagram as at zero disorder, as a function of temperature and a phenomenological tuning parameter x. So we introduce this x. The reason we introduce this x is we want to tune the system from SDW dominated to CDW dominated. Just like this x is just like the doping in experiments. But here is just a phenomenological tuning parameter. So these dashed lines are the mean field or bare transition temperatures of SDW and CDW, meaning that those are the transition temperatures when there is no spatial fluctuation and no interaction between the two density waves. So for small x is dominated by SDW and larger x is dominated by CDW. And the explicit functional form of those lines as a function of x does not matter. The topology of the phase diagram will remain the same. Okay, now let's turn on interaction and turn on spatial fluctuation. And you can see that the density wave transitions will be suppressed. And depending on the parameter range, at lower temperature, there could be a coexisting spin and charge density wave phase, or a first order transition between from spin to charge density wave, which I'm not showing here. So the important thing is that at intermediate temperature regime, there is a pneumatic phase transition. And in this green region, it is just one pneumatic phase. There's no phase transition from small x to large x. Although I should mention that there is a crossover from small x to large x in the sense that this region is SDW, more SDW driven, and this region, the pneumaticity in this region is more CDW driven, but there's no phase transition. It's just one single pneumatic phase. So that's the take-home message. Okay, so this is the zero disorder phase diagram. Now let's turn on disorder. As expected, CDW is killed, but SDW and pneumatic phase still survive, provided the disorder is not too strong. And CDW will only have fluctuations, not long-range orders. Okay, and the last thing I would like to point out is that although our theory is a classical effective field theory, it's a phenomenological theory, it still has some degree of similarities with the Couperet phase diagram. So as to how much our theory is close to reality, I will leave the judgment to you. Okay, a quick summary of the second part of my talk. So we studied effective field theory model consisting of two types of density waves and found that there is one type pneumaticity. Okay, so this is the summary of my talk, and thank you.
Questions?
It's perhaps more like the pursuit of perfection. At least listening to Seamus Davis recently, you have to worry also about commensurate lock-in, right? That it looks like as if the real Justin Swift, whatever, wants to lock in at the 4A lattice periodicity and that you find this commensuration, etc. Now, I can imagine that that can have quite a bit of influence on this whole business, right? Because you're basically dealing again with a discrete symmetry, right? Where you have a very strong lock-in instead of an O2, yeah. Let alone an ON. You have more like a C4 or something.
Yeah.
Have you thought about it? What would be the consequences for the story?
So that's a very good question. So if the charge density wave is commensurate, then it's a totally different story. Every conclusion I talk about here is based on the fact that the charge density wave is incommensurate. It breaks continuous symmetry, right? And now let's go back to the question whether it is commensurate or incommensurate. I think that's still under debate. Like STM.
Can I
ask? Okay.
I think it's a no-brainer when you just look use your eyes, right? And you see this locally, quite locked in. And we agree that the precise way that these disk commensurations, whatever, are organized is a little bit in the dark, but surely commensuration energies are playing a big role. Now, I'm not entirely convinced it's all that different, right? Because, you know, when there are enough disk commensurations, when there's enough Devil's staircase, you might sort of get back at the same physics. I don't know the answer of it, but I think the statement that you have a real incommensurate charge density wave, excuse me, look at the pictures, no way. It's a myth.
So the evidence of a commensurate charge lock-in comes from STM. That's what you're saying. Is there any evidence from X-ray saying that it is?
Listen, everybody who has worked on incommensurate systems in classical physics knows it. When you want to figure out, right, whether it's like disk commensurations or either real incommensurate, you can see it in Fourier space.
I see.
Right? Because all that, you know, complicated disk commensuration stuff is basically disappearing in the diffuse background, and you just get to see the effort periodicity, you know, which is incommensurate regardless whether you have disk commensuration or a real incommensurate charge density wave. But it's very classic business. We'll all figure
I
out.
I see what you mean. So you're saying that in X-ray is averaging out a commensurate and disk commensuration configuration into an incommensurate. So that's a very good point. We didn't consider it here. And also, I would like to mention the NMR experiments, which suggest also a commensurate.
Yeah, the high field ones are commensurate.
Right. So that's another story, like how to reconcile all of these experiments together and how to modify this theory.
Yeah, I think it's interesting open nursing.
Yeah.
So my chair's helper has other one.
Thank you. It's a very simple question. In your model, you already start, if I understood correctly, with two incommensurate or four incommensurate spin density wave ordering vectors. You started pi, and then you said, oh, I'm going to already consider. So in this case, nematicity, will it affect the degree of incommensurability itself, or this is going to be constant all over temperature?
What do you mean?
So you have a splitting, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
In our pi peak.
Yes.
And that gives your, I think you call Qx and Qy, I don't remember.
Right.
Or Kx, yeah, right. So this epsilon, is it affected by nematicity, or is it just something that it would be constant at all temperatures?
Oh, so the Qx and Qy are not.
Yes.
Are not, they are plus minus epsilon.
So that's fixed then, it doesn't
Yeah,
change.
That's fixed, okay. Yeah, I think.
Can I ask? Just ask a question about your model for this part. If you can go to your model. So the last term which you erased, saying in YBCO the CDW wave vector has nothing to do with the CBW, so that sounds pretty reasonable. But So the presence of disorder, presumably there will be a term that couples precisely in the form of the last term. And I don't know how that affects any of your conclusions, but why did you not consider that coupling?
So you're saying there would be a disorder term that looks like...
like your last term.
That is quadratic coupling to S.
Yes.
Yes, that's a very good point. We didn't consider that because that...
We have a paragraph on it.
Yes, right. But we didn't do calculations
so,
on that
so
term.
A paragraph to explain why it's not important. So what's the...
It's a classic example of how men and women communicate differently.
No, no, no. So presumably that paragraph explains why it's not important to consider this, right?
Sorry, say it again.
Presumably that paragraph explains why that term is not important. Okay.
No.
Well, it's important. You won't consider
it. It explains why only Sintel knows how to do anything.
Yeah. It's like a random field for the spin density wave.
Yeah.
Yeah, that will have a tremendous effect. Yeah. Yeah.
So, can you put up your... Sorry, here.
Oh, here.
Can you put up your phase diagram for the CDW case?
Yes.
Yeah, so I have a question about if you imagine you're along the x-axis, I would think that in a real experiment, as you tune disorder up, what you would see is perhaps charge density wave ordered patches, which are separated because of defect pinning or something like this. So I'm struggling a little bit to see what the precise distinction between charge density wave or stripe order is, and the pneumatic is in this. Is there really a transition? Should one think of it as a transition or
so,
a crossover?
Right. So here, when I say stripe phase or unidirectional charge density wave phase, I mean truly long range phase.
Uh-huh.
The correlation length is infinite.
I see.
So in a theoretical sense, yeah. But here, in the pneumatic phase, there could still be relatively long range, like not infinite correlated CDW correlations, CDW fluctuations. So the case you were describing where they have CDW patches, mm-hmm. I think that can be fit in here, where I have short range or not infinite correlated CDW correlations.
I see. And so that would be in contrast to going up the y-axis, where as I go through TSTR up there, that would be truly sort of only pneumatic phase and no charge density wave.
Those are the same. Like those, so from this to this and from this to this are the same. You have, so from red to black are both cases are you have long range infinite correlated CDW order, and then either temperature or disorder will kill it, leaving behind a long-range pneumatic phase and a short-range correlated CDW.
I guess the question is whether one expects to see static signatures of charge density wave in these two different regions.
So, okay, so within the framework of this theory, I cannot answer you because it's a classical theory. It doesn't have dynamics. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about fluctuations in this classical theory, we mean short-range CDW. So the fluctuation has different meaning in different people's dictionaries, but in this, yeah.
When you go into the strong, there's one coupling constant in your theory that determines whether you have these pneumatic configurations or checkerboard or
yes.
And so forth. So, and in the strong disorder limit, one could imagine that this object fluctuates as well or has to be comes along, yeah, exactly. So it will be affected by disorder and could even change its sign, right? So that, in fact, the integrity of having a pneumatic state is locally being disrupted. Would this change the qualitative behavior of the phase diagram? I could imagine a glassy type story go right there before you actually die out in your pneumatic order.
So you're saying that...
I want this guy to be random, right? Delta. At some point, it's going to be random. Okay. If it changes sign, then you don't even have the order parameter you want to properly define locally.
Yes. If delta is also disordered,
and eventually it will be, right? It's inevitable. Right.
That's right.
But it should change sign, of course. That's why I said in the strong disorder limit, near where the pneumatic disappears, that should probably change the nature of the phase diagram.
Like you mean here?
Right there, yes.
Yes, I agree. This part will change if delta becomes disordered. Yeah.
So in this model where the pneumaticity comes from an underlying unidirectional charge ordered and spin ordered phases. I wonder, to what extent experimentally do we know that both of these phases really are unidirectional? I mean, the ordered ones. So, you know, in YBCO, it's not entirely clear, in particular in the low field phase, that it is unidirectional. You know, there's two vectors in both directions. So, just like to know what you think about that. And also in the spin density wave at low temperature, I don't actually recall how strongly unidirectional the spin density wave in YBCO is. I know the fluctuations have this slight anisotropy at high temperature, but I don't recall at low temperature how, you know, decisively unidirectional it is.
If my memory, so let's go to the spin density wave first. I think if my memory is correct, this remains unidirectional.
So it just remains more or less like this?
Yeah. Yeah.
The slides, okay, the same, more or less the same splitting
right.
in the order.
Yeah, actually, also go back to Raphael's question. I think I made a mistake when I was answering your question. There, the incommensurability, the epsilon, does have a temperature dependence.
In the model?
Oh, in the model, no. Yeah. In the experiment, yes. Yeah. Yeah. So SDW is more or less unidirectional. Now go to the question of CDW. So I said that in our model, we're not taking into account the latest high field experiment, but actually we are sort of referring to that high field experiment to justify our claim that it is a stripe phase. It is stripe phase in the high field, and it looks checkerboard in the low field because of disorder. So that's our belief, that's our assumption in our theory. There could be other possibilities. I agree, yeah.
Just a simple technical question. So suppose the pneumatic fluctuation of SDW and CDW are completely decoupled. So just I have two transparent theory of one CDW pneumaticity and SDW pneumaticity.
Mm-hmm.
Then you should see two pneumatic transition lines, one going tilted, the other going completely horizontal,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Now suppose I turn on a small coupling term, which pins the pneumaticity as you claim, right? As you're saying, right? Would you see a second transition up, below the first pneumatic order line?
Let me
so initially you see two inner, yeah. Right, for the pneumatic phase, if I have two completely non-talking theory.
Right, so I have this line and then another pneumatic line.
And then suppose I turn on the small coupling between the SDW pneumaticity and, and CDW pneumaticity. Then you should, in principle, seeing the two pneumatic transition lines, right?
If I turn on the interactions between the two density waves, then it becomes one pneumaticity. Because once...
Right, but suppose the interaction is very small, then, I mean, way to the left.
From symmetry consideration...
Right. Right, but the second line just disappears.
What do you mean by the second line? Like there will be some modification when they near the intersection, but there's one line because the pneumatic order parameter, those two pneumatic order parameters, once the coupling is on, once the interaction term is turned on, then if this develops a non-zero value, this will immediately follow, and vice versa.
Right,
so
I understand.
They're just one pneumaticity.
Also bizarre. Far away from whenever the two order parameters are comparable, then the second transition would immediately disappear.
Can I comment on?
Just turn to the short puzzle.
Yeah, as a function of temperature, you may see some behavior, but there's no, unless the other pneumatic transition is first order, then you could see like a meta pneumatic, but that would be the most extreme case, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't know how relevant my question is to the cuprates, but just a simple question. So the fact that SCW survives the disorder, does that have to do with the fact that you put in charge disorder?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So and also the fact that we don't put in magnetic disorder. Yeah. Magnetic disorder would be a random field disorder for SDW.
We are running late for the enjoying the coffee, so let me use my privilege to ask the last question. Is that possible to use a vestigial order to get a diagonal pneumatic similar to what Masuda just mentioned to us earlier?
Diagonal.
With the main axis U and A and B strikes, is that possible to get the pneumatic in the diagonal direction?
I think so. If you have diagonal stripes, then you can get diagonal.
No diagonal stripes.
Oh.
The stripe you have here.
Oh.
It's possible to get a diagonal pneumatic.
Can I comment, Chair?
Oh.
So if you, I know for in a different case, like when you have the double stripe in J1, J2, J3, then you do get that phase. But the Qs have to be diagonal, but cannot be pi, then it's trivial. But yes, you can get it.
Okay, let's thank our speaker and all the speakers.